Hi, today is June 12th, 2022. This is Mobile Views Podcast 411. I'm Todd Ogasawara with my good friend, Dr. John Westfall. And first, I want to thank my old friend Robert Lee for guest co-hosting on Podcast 410, which I recorded just 2 days ago. Kind of unusual to have two podcasts in 2 days, or 3 days, I guess. But it was a lot of fun. I knew nothing about heat pumps except how to spell it when we started, and I still know, well, at least I know there's a space between heat and pump now, so I learned that much. And I learned a few other things, though. That was a really interesting talk with Robert Lee. So thanks, Robert Lee, and best wishes with your new endeavor. Okay, so between the time we last spoke, WWDC happened, and there was no AR/VR announcement, which I was kind of disappointed. I was really hoping, I mean, again, you know, like we said, we don't know what the use case is for us, aside from watching Netflix on a, you know, virtually gigantic screen.
And I think it's one of those things, and I'll talk about this a little more when we talk about WWDC. It's one of those things where I kind of have to see it and use it to find a use case scenario in it. And I think that's what's held AR and VR back the entire, you know, 20, 30 years we've talked about such concepts, because unless you're actually using it and actively seeing the benefit of it, it's really hard to wrap your head around how it could be beneficial. You know, right now, I've been watching a lot of baseball, and there's a company, Win Reality, that does VR training, and they've got a ad running right now with the son of a former Major League Baseball player using their VR tool, and I get that. I get how it could actually be very useful. That at least makes sense to me, but I don't play baseball. So I'm not going to go out and say, you know, let me try that, because I, you know, I might play with it for 5 minutes and that would be about it. So I think that's where we're sitting when it comes to the VR AR space. Unless you actually have a real use for it, you don't really quite get it yet.
Yeah. Well, like for me, the use is, you know, giant Netflix screen. Since I don't have a giant TV in my home. But you're right. I don't know what it would be. I think that, you know, as I get older and a little bit more forgetful, I think it'll be real useful if it says, hey, you know, you run into somebody and does a facial recognition, goes, hey, that's your old friend, John. say hi, John.
Yeah, we're literally guide you through.
Yeah.
Have an interaction.
And I should note, I am terrible at remembering names, so it is not a cognitive decline for me not to remember names. It's just the way I've always been. I recognize faces like, oh, yeah, I know you. I just don't know what your name is. And it's, you know, please don't take it the wrong way.
I always, my trick with that when I teach, because, you know, when you teach, you see the faces and you see the names, but they don't often go together. They often are in different, you know, spaces in your life where you see the names outside of class because they're on the roster, you see the students inside class, etc. So I was talking with you know, a few people. I was saying, well, you know, my trick is when a student comes up to me and says, you know, can you mark this down or blah blah blah, I'll say, well, what's your last name? Because that way, what I'm really looking for is their first name, but I, you know, I have plausible deniability because they're roster is alphabetical, you know, and I can just scroll their last thing very quickly. But I recently realized that it's not just me who struggles with this. My students were telling me that I always thought it was nice that after maybe the second week of classes, I didn't have to call roster because I knew who people were. Even if it was just by process of elimination, I go, you're so-and-so, you're so-and-so. And I actually had students tell me that they wish I would call roll more often because that's how they learn the names of each other.
Oh, interesting.
And I had not really thought about that, but I at least see people to names quite a bit in a variety of contexts. They do not.
Huh. I never thought of it. And, you know, not being a group study kind of person, I never wanted to know the names of my classmates, generally speaking. So I didn't care, I guess, when I was in college. But that is an interesting observation that I had not thought of, but it makes sense. And I have to say, at meetings, you know, at business meetings, not that I really want to know who people are, but sometimes it is useful to know their names in context of their position and what they're responsible for. So I also wish in business meetings people would make it a regular practice, especially in large ones where people may not have met each other, especially during the pandemic, to simply call out a name and say what, you know, what their task / job / responsibility is. But that's another thing. Hey, before I forget, I do want to note And as usual, since we have no sponsors, this is just a note, not a... I got a new microphone, which I'm using right now. It's a Blue Yeti Nano to replace my Blue Yeti Macro. Well, the original Blue Yeti, which is gigantic. And in fact, one of the differences for John in recording this podcast is although we don't record the video, we do show video to each other so we can get visual cues. And John may note he has not seen my spit shield anymore, which used to just kind of sit way in front in front of the large Blue Yeti, because the little Blue Yeti, the Nano, is really little, and I'm kind of showing it to him now. And hopefully the sound is okay. But we'll find out when we listen to the recording. The first time I'm using it, by the way. So, yay. It was on sale on Amazon, so I picked one up. Alrighty. Okay, so WWDC. The only thing I would say that was announced that was of interest to me was iPadOS 16. And it was not announced during the keynote, but later we learned that the coolest features of iPadOS 16 are like we speculated last week Sunday, only going to be available in M1-based iPads. What do you think about that, John? I mean, we're right, so in one sense, okay, yay us, you know.
I mean, it doesn't surprise me too much. I was actually looking at my iPad Pro that I've been using and realized that it's 3.5 years old. And that's – I would have never thought that I would still be happy with a 3.5-year-old iPhone iPad. And I think this is becoming an issue for Apple, where they do such a good job of leaving your device more or less functional for multiple years that there's really not ever a giant incentive to upgrade. And so if – you know, the idea is kill two birds with one stone, target your newer processors, don't worry about building good code that'll support the older processors, just build code for the new, you know, take care of all the new bells and whistles. It also will push people to upgrade, which isn't a bad thing in their mind. So I'm a little bit bummed about it, but also Center Stage as the new multitasking interface, that's one that, like I said, I'm gonna have to use that to actually find value, because already I've got 100 different ways to manage the interface on my MacBook, and I don't use any of it really, other than occasionally mission control and occasionally what is it when you do the I'm doing the gesture where all the windows kind of tiles, you can see them all.
I don't know what that's called either.
So really, I don't learn these things by seeing them on a keynote and going, wow, that's cool, I'm going to immediately start doing that. I learn it by it's now on my device and I can play with it and I go, oh, that's actually useful.
Right.
So I think that's where we're going to, I'll miss it until I have a device that has it, and then I will have it, and then I won't worry about it because I'll have a device that has it. So it's sort of a, you know, cyclical issue.
Yeah. And you know, I like you, I don't have any M1 based iPads either. So I'm a little disappointed that I won't get the new features, you know, on my... And my newest iPad Pro is 2020, so it's not that old. It's 2 years old. And I should note that the iPad Mini 4 is finally dropping out of the update cycle, period. Not just features. But I looked it up. The iPad Mini 4, current is 6. iPad Mini 4 was released in November of 2012, so it's a 10-year-old device. And, you know, it's got updates of 9 years. Hey, I'm pretty happy with that. I mean, compare that to the Samsung Tabs that I were looking at a couple of weeks ago. You might remember that I passed on them because 2-3-year-old devices, they're going to get their last update next year.
Mm-hmm.
You know, after only a couple of years. So it's like, oh, well, you know, why do I want to do that? It's called Stage Manager, by the way. And it only works on the iPad Pro 12.9, 5th generation, iPad Pro 11, 3rd generation, all M1s, of course, and iPad Air 5th generation. And it's with the resizable windows and all of that. And there are a couple. Then there's something called Access Apps and External Display and Drag and Drop Between iPad and External Display. Those two, so external display features, only work on the Pros. They don't work on the iPad Air with the M1. And then there's something called Reference Mode. But and that's going to be very, you know, very vertical kind of thing, very niche kind of thing. And it lets you use liquid retina displays to deliver reference color. And that only works on the 12.9 iPad Pro. So pretty limited, you know. I actually considered buying an iPad Air M1 refurb to save some money. But, mm-hmm. you know, if this thing's going to be out in September, October, we're probably going to see new iPad Pros anyway. So I expect that the current M1 models will go down a little, and maybe we'll see some M2 iPad Pros. So I'll consider my options at that time. But, you know, like my iPad Pro 11 is only 2 years old. So it's like you, I don't really replace iPads that often. Don't really see the need like you. But with new features, I kind of do want the not tiled windows, but the overlapping windows. You know, a very desktop environment, right? It's getting closer and closer to Mac OS. Mm-hmm. So, and I even bought a keyboard, you might recall. I bought a new $30 ArtTech keyboard with a touchpad. So it's not that I want to duplicate a desktop on an iPad, but it's nice to have the option to do that. Okay. And although we didn't expect it, they didn't announce any enhancements, I think. Did they? They may have slipped in some enhancements to the AirPods Pro, but I'd have to go look that up. And no new AirPods Pro or not. So that's probably this fall with a new iPhone and iPad. All right. So what did you find interesting? I mean, like I said, the only thing I was looking forward to was the overlapping windows in iPad OS 16.
Well, I did like the idea of a more useful lock screen. Mm. You know, the idea of widgets on the lock screen that you could customize. Because when I think about what I glance at my lock screen for, it's the time and everything else I have to interact with in some way. Or I've got a ton of notifications that don't really work that well. So the live update feature, where instead of getting 75 notifications for a sports game, I can actually get one that would just, you know, show me at a glance. And the idea of multiple lock screens is nice, too. In fact, it looks like what they basically did was take the idea of an Apple Watch face and make it a lock screen on your iPhone. So I'll be interested in that. I like the idea that dictation and keyboard can be interchangeably mixed, because there are times I do use dictation and I think I just want a period here, or I want a space here, or I know this word is going to get butchered anyway, so let me just tap it out.
Right. Good point.
The schedule email and undo send are two features that'll be nice to have in mail. I am curious, though, if the schedule email is going to be client side or server side. Because there are benefits and cons to both. I assume client side, because that's, you know, who knows how many different things they're willing to handle on their servers. But schedule email will be a nice one to have, especially for situations where I'm emailing at 3 a.m, you know, and you don't really want your email to go out at 3 a.m.
I was just going to ask for use case, and there you go. There's the use case.
Yeah, definitely. You know, especially if you've got someone else who you know will respond quickly. There are times when it'll be like, okay, it is 11:30. If I email now, they will respond to 11:45, and I'm going to lunch, and I do not want them to email me back. So let me set this for 12:30, and that'll be right when I get back from lunch. And if they want to bother me right then and there, fine, you know. But I've already got it out of my my queue, in a sense.
I wonder if undo send will only work in the Apple ecosystem.
I think it'll work across the board, because I think it's just a 10-second delay.
Okay.
Yeah, the easiest idea programmatically on the planet, but now we will actually get it.
Yeah. So it's not a recall. It is literally just a oops.
Button. And that's all it ever was in Gmail, too, when they rolled it out. It was just a 10-second delay or a 30-second delay or whatever you set it to.
Yeah, because, you know, in the Microsoft world, an Exchange server, you can recall a message, but there are limits to it, to when and how. And if it goes out of the Exchange ecosystem, it's like gone. You can't recall.
Yeah, I have some great stories I can tell you off the podcast about that, seeing that disastrous thing happen. But anyway, the next thing I'm curious to see how Apple is able to or not able to do is passkey. The idea that all of your devices or all of your passwords would actually be long cryptographic keys and they would be stored in iCloud Keychain. I think it's a really slick idea that you would just use a QR code to log into a website, you know, show your camera at it and it logs you in and you never have to type a password. I think that'll solve some, security issues. And I think Apple might actually have a decent shot at getting this off the ground. you know, they've done fairly well with signing with Apple ID over the last year.
Yeah.
So they can get people to adopt them for authentication. And this, if it doesn't require a lot on the third-party programming side, could be a very useful way to get people to stop setting easy-to-guess, easy-to-phish passwords.
Alrighty.
And the last three things are pretty simple. Handoff expanding to FaceTime. There are times I will pick up a call. There have actually been times I've missed a call because I've wanted to pick it up on a certain device.
Right.
And I haven't been near that device, and I'll be walking to that device, and then the call will, you know, I'll miss the call.
Yeah.
So that would be a nice thing to have. I'd really like that to work from watch to phone and back again.
Oh, that makes sense.
Things around that way. And then the redesigned weather apps, I think they are finally going to kill Dark Sky, because now the Dark Sky website finally says, hey, you know, this is ending at the end of this year. So I assume that is what they are integrating into their default weather apps. But bringing real weather app to the iPad would be nice, after, because the Weather Channel is just so ad spammy to look at.
Oh, boy.
It's practically unusable, in my opinion. And then finally, watchOS 9 has some nice workout tweaks, interface tweaks. I really like the idea of a custom workout, because there are times I think I want to do, you know, jog for 10 minutes, then I want to walk, then I want to jog again, those sorts of circuit workouts. It was really hard to do that before, because you have to start a new walk, start a new workout, end an existing one. It did get nicer when you could start a new one before ending the current one, but. But yeah, those are the things I'm most excited about. There are some things I'm not that interested in. I recognize the importance of the M2 chip, but I'm not ready to jump into Apple Silicon just yet on the desktop. Mm. My 2020 Core i7 is still working just fine. And really anything that I'm not going to have day-to-day interaction with, I'm going to have to wait and see how much I enjoy it. Now, last year, the big surprise for me was focus groups. I didn't think I was going to use that feature at all. And now I use it.
No kidding.
Not all the time, but I use it a fair amount. Hmm. I use the sleep focus quite a bit. I use focus for some geotagged locations. If I go certain places, I have a focus group set up for those. But so we'll have to see.
Yeah. And, you know, not only is Dark Sky the app, which I use every day, going to end at the end of this calendar year, but I also see a message on darksky.net that Dark Sky API will end on March 31st of next calendar year, 2023. And as you know, Carrot Weather and some other folks use that engine. So I think Carrot Weather has an alternate engine it can use. But quite frankly, Dark Sky's been, until last 2 years, until Apple bought it, it was really amazing. And then Apple bought, it's kind of like Siri. You know how Siri became kind of stupid after Apple bought it? Dark Sky has become decreasingly accurate since Apple bought Dark Sky. I have no idea why. Its temperature is a little bit off. It doesn't predict rainfall as accurately as useful, so it's become less useful overall.
Yeah,
it's very
I'll
odd.
Agree with that. And I used to, you know, swear by Dark Sky, and it's been letting me down a little bit more. And I did have Carrot Weather for a while, but I kind of gave it up. The whole thing of Carrot having a snarky personality was cute for a week or two, and then it became, okay, this is kind of boring. So, but yeah, just a reliable weather app. That's all I really want.
Yeah. And, you know, you can turn down the snarkiness on Carrot Top, Carrot Weather, I should say Carrot Top, not the comedian, Carrot Weather. What I like about Carrot Weather versus Dark Sky, which, you know, uses the same data, is I like the UI, you know, the way it looks. Mm. And it's just a really clean design. I kind of prefer it. I'm looking at Dark Sky and Carrot Weather, and Carrot Weather is just more compact, easier to read. I like it. I'm gonna miss it. And it does say Source Dusk Dark Sky. Can I change? Who am I? I don't know. I assume they'll give us the option to change this. I actually paid money for this, but we shall see. I guess next spring, what Carrot Weather and other Dark Sky engine users do. That said, oddly, as Dark Sky's forecast became less useful, Apple's weather app, which uses the same engine, so again, I'm not understanding this at all, became actually more accurate than Dark Sky. So sometimes I just look at the Apple weather app on my phone, and one of the things I guess this weather app is finally going to be available for the iPad, which I've never understood why it wasn't available. Anyway, so M1 versus Intel. You know, so I've had my M1-based MacBook Air since it came out. And I will say that the support of M1 directly in apps is a big deal now. And it took a little while for that to happen. But more importantly, if you use your MacBook Pro or Intel-based MacBook Pro or MacBook Air a lot, you'll know it gets hot. I mean, it's just hot. And in fact, I can hear my MacBook Pro's fan ring now because whenever you do video conference calls, it just takes a lot of processor power. And it really heats up. I should grab a thermometer and go see how hot this thing is getting. It feels like it's over 100 degrees right now. The M1 runs cool. You know, like the iPad, it somehow shunts heat into an alternate dimension. And that other universe is getting really warm from all the heat shunted from this universe to that one. But it runs really cool. The M1-based MacBook Air runs really cool. It really doesn't get hot. It's pretty amazing just for that alone. And if you live in you currently live in a warm environment during the summer at least, and keeping things cool is a really good thing. You know, I didn't see anything else announced or play with this week that I found really that interesting. I don't know, John. Did you? That's all I got.
Yeah, there was not too much that I thought was all that interesting. And WWDC, I was happy with it, but again, a lot of it's going to be just got to see how it actually works when I, you know, get my hands on it.
Yeah, if we get our hands on it, because we have to upgrade to M1 iPad Pros to get our hands on some of this stuff.
For some of them, yeah, definitely.
Yeah, or an M2, if they release an M2 iPad Pro this fall, which may or may not happen. I'm going to say probably not, because they probably want to upgrade all the Macs first. But who can tell? And I may, just to save money, I may get a refurb, you know, directly from Apple to save some money. You know, I've been having, just as a separate note, I've been having some problems with my Wi-Fi access point. And so I threw on an old travel access point I had. I mean, really old. And as a backup, just in case, you know, the access point suddenly fails. And so I went to Amazon this morning just before the podcast, and I looked up what's available now. And I found it's kind of a no-name. What did I buy? I ordered hang on, I'm just clicking through this, my order. It's a GL.inet store, or GL.inet is the brand name, I guess. And the cool thing about it's, well, there are a couple of cool things. One, I think it was like $40. Yeah, it's $40. And the other cool thing is it uses OpenWRT for its innards, or, you know, its firmware innards. So I know this is shocking. I don't think I've ever had an OpenWRT-based anything before. So I'm looking forward to it. It's small. It's, you know, it'll be my backup in case stuff fails in the house. So, you know, it doesn't need any desk space, I think. And it's powered off a USB-C. Because it's a travel router, so, you know, if you're using it to in a hotel room or something, you don't need extra plugs, which is kind of neat. But that is about it. I don't think I have ordered any, except for my microphone. And we'll find out how the Blue Yeti Nano sounds once I process the audio here. And boy, this was a short podcast, 25 minutes. That's one of our shorter ones. I'm kind of shocked. Now, I think you are off on several super secret missions this summer.
Yeah, next week I will be traveling, so okay. I am assured that you will hold down the fort, or you will find someone to be your victim for next week. I don't know.
See
what people want to do.
So one of the things I'm hoping to do. I mean, and it, you know, depends on people's schedules and so forth. But although we've had other Hawaii-based techies on before, I'm hoping to have a little mini series this summer of. Maybe not Hawaii based. Robert is, you know, was born and raised here. Robert Lee, who did podcast 410 with me, although he hasn't lived in Hawaii for well over a decade now, but, you know, he's still of Hawaii, of the Aina, as they say. And so I'm hoping to get some Hawaii based folks here, whether from afar or near, to have kind of a local flavor to the show. So I'll ask some friends. Hopefully a few of them will have some time, and We'll see how that happens when on days that you're not available. But in the meantime, I think I'm trying to remember if there's any other. So we've had Google's I/O, we've had WWDC, Microsoft's whatever was. There was never anything interesting there. So that's about it for the summer, right? I don't think there's any other big events that are going on that I can think of, at least.
No, we'll just have to kind of see. Now, occasionally random things do wander out in the summer, and we'll be hearing about, the different betas and what people end up finding about the betas. I actually have heard that the watchOS beta is surprisingly stable.
Oh, really?
A lot of people have been saying that that's one that... So I've been tempted to perhaps install it early, but...
Ooh.
Brave. I might not. Yeah, it definitely is one of those ones where you don't know how much you want to trust it at the state we're at.
Especially since I only have one watch. And
that is true.
I would be leery of putting a beta on a production system, so to speak, even if it is just quote unquote. I have to say, I don't use all the features of my Apple Watch, but boy, the ones I do use, I use them every day. And it's, just getting notifications and, that alone, just getting notifications is a big deal. I remember years and I don't know if you remember this one, John, at one of the MVP summits, Microsoft MVP summits we were at, we were in a big hotel ballroom and a whole bunch of people were showing off products in development. And one of them was a beta of the Spot Watch. And, I'm going to tear up now, but... beta of the beloved Spot Watch, and it had a Bluetooth interface to Windows Mobile, and which at the time had a phone edition, so we could do notifications and caller ID, and it could do those kind of rudimentary tasks. I remember thinking, wow, that is cool, and they showed a demo of it, so it was functional, but it never happened. It was never released, and then I think Spot died an untimely death, so it's too bad. It's too bad. If they had just killed the Spot Network, which was on a FM radio band, if I remember correctly. Or was it an AM radio band?
FM, I believe.
Yeah. Boy, just, kill the FM radio in it. That would be fine. Just put Bluetooth and have it talk to my Windows, my Pocket PC Phone Edition, and I would have been a happy camper. But no, that's not what happened.
That would have been too easy.
Yeah. And then, of course, when Windows Phone 7 came along, they would have killed all compatibility anyway, so I would have been unhappy.
Well, yeah. Windows Phone 7 just broke so many hearts.
It broke my heart. Despite the people saying, Windows Phone had a great UI, and tiled UI was nice, but it broke all my apps, so what's the use? Mm-hmm. Alrighty, on that downer of a note, I will stop the recording. This has been Mobile Views Podcast. I was going to say Windows Mobile Podcast. Mobile Views Podcast 411. On my brand new Blue Yeti Nano. We'll see how this sounds. We'll talk to you later.